Can the U.S. shrug off emerging market blues? From APM in New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Midday Update. With the morning open, a look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts its trading day. And it's been a bumpy weekend ever since a big stock market sell-off here in the U.S. on Friday. And a lot of emerging markets in the red today, down as much as 2%. To talk about it, we're joined live by Julia Coronado, chief economist at BNP Paribas in New York. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
So we had that nasty sell-off on Friday, some ugly emerging market data. So far, markets this morning are okay.
Mm-hmm.
How much of an effect is this going to have throughout the week, do you think?
Well, you know, we're going to have to wait and see. You know, we knew there were trouble spots around the world, and it's not surprising to see some of those countries wobble the way they have. The feedback into the U.S., is not entirely clear how much that impacts the U.S. economy, which has been doing a little bit better. It's not that clear that it should take that much steam out of the U.S. market.
Well, corporate America is in the middle of earnings season, and some of those earnings have been good. Some others are kind of so-so. What's the earnings picture like right now?
That's the more relevant question, I think, for the U.S. markets. The earnings season has been mixed. It's been harder for companies to find profit growth. They are facing a lot of pricing pressures from the consumer. So we're watching that pretty carefully to see what companies are saying they're seeing on the ground and what they're saying they're planning on doing as far as hiring and investing.
We got another Fed meeting this week. Very quickly, you think the Fed's going to taper another $10 billion?
Yes, I don't think that anything that we've seen in terms of market wobbles will derail them from their plan of very gradually and patiently easing back from its bond buying. So we get another taper, as they call them, this week, and then they'll wait and see and gather more information.
Julia Coronado, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
The deadline to sign up for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act or face penalties is a little more than 2 months away now, March 31st. A survey out today says a lot of people don't know that. But as Marketplace's Amy Scott explains, a recent court ruling might help get the word out.
More than half of Americans don't know when the deadline is to sign up for health insurance, says Bankrate.com. Granted, many of those people already have insurance.
But we do think that our findings about young adults are somewhat worrisome.
Bankrate's Doug Whiteman says everyone is counting on the young and healthy to balance out the insurance pool to keep costs down.
We found that young adults between 18 and 29, which is the age group least likely to have health insurance, also is the group that seems least informed about the deadline.
One thing that might be preventing better awareness, 17 states have passed laws limiting the work of the so-called navigators, who are supposed to help people sign up on the federal exchange. Last week, a federal judge blocked Missouri's restrictions on navigators. Attorney Jay Angoff represented groups suing the state.
By preventing navigators from doing their jobs, states really undercut and undermine a fundamental purpose of the Affordable Care Act.
Angoff says the Missouri ruling could help opponents fight similar laws in other states. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
About 2 million kids in the U.S. go to charter schools, privately run, publicly funded. One criticism is that they lack diversity, often serving minority and low-income students. Others cater to the affluent. But some charter schools see a benefit to pulling kids from all over. From our Wealth and Poverty Desk, WPLN's Blake Farmer reports from Nashville.
Todd Dixon is trying something a bit unusual for charter school founders. He's recruiting students to Valor Collegiate Academy from working-class neighborhoods and Nashville's wealthiest enclaves.
Thank you so much for coming today, and I think most of you have had a chance to meet Todd Dixon, but take it away, Todd.
Thank you. First, thanks for hosting. We really appreciate it.
Dixon is addressing families with the means to pay private school tuition, but these parents also want to give public schools a chance. A father himself, Dixon also helped start Summit Prep in the San Francisco area. There are similar charters in places like Denver and New Orleans. Their belief? All income levels benefit from learning side by side. helping them understand multiple perspectives.
It's much more authentic and easy to learn to do that well if you're learning with kids who really have different experiences and different backgrounds than you do.
The trick is getting everyone in the same classroom. Jennifer Erickson worries her daughter is being raised in a bubble at her private school.
I mean, to me, education isn't just about books. It's about being able to be well-rounded in all areas. That is a very big piece that my daughter is not getting. I mean, of course, there comes negatives with that.
Well-off families often question whether these charters can really push high performers while trying to get disadvantaged students doing double time. It's not uncommon for some to come into middle school reading at a second grade level. This recruiting session is at an immigrant community center. An interpreter translates in a whisper to a Hispanic mother. These parents aren't so worried about raising kids in a bubble. They're looking for opportunity. Hafsa Muhammad's son attends a struggling school now.
I want him to go forward, not backward.
A few of these charters with integrated student bodies have been successful getting everyone prepared for college. But advocates say there's a bigger benefit that doesn't show up on a report card. Relationships that span the divide between rich and poor. In Nashville, I'm Blake Farmer for Marketplace.
I'm just putting this last story out there. Searches for affordable flights to Denver are outpacing ones for all other U.S. destinations, with a big jump starting January 1st. Hooper Research found a 14% increase in interest to travel to the Mile High City since the start of the year. That's when recreational marijuana became legal. In New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Midday Update.